Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It's a great day for science, and I think it's a great day for research. Expanding what kinds of ethical cell-based research can be done is so important to finding the cures for diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and nerve regeneration and diabetes. Mm-hmm. It's very exciting for the patients of America.
Well, didn't she say something about the government shouldn't intervene with science? Did we hear that as well, guys? Didn't that come up as well on this stem cell debate? Let's hear the rest of that.
All the researchers tell us embryonic stem cell research is still very, very important. We've had some exciting new discoveries in the last few years of other types of cell-based research, and I'm as excited about them as stem cell research.
But there's no money in it.
But really, policymakers are not the ones to be making decisions.
Tell that to Mengele.
Scientists what type of research.
Right, scientists like Mengele. He didn't want a policymaker to interfere with his experiments on human guinea pigs.
All ethical types of cell-based research.
Shut up. Get that witch off my show. Let me hear the opening music again. This is the Savage Nation, and I can't take this anymore. I will have the stem cell debate with you. We will talk about the failures of Barack Obama and enumerate them. We will talk about pulling out of Iraq, catering to the Taliban, the Global New Deal, and other stuff right here in the Savage Nation. Fire the beginning again, because I'm ready to start all over again. What happened? It died right off the bat. I love it. But we're having a little problem today. All right, stop the music. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We can talk about these and other topics, and I will, and I'll delineate them a little further. I want to tell you I'm securely in place here in front of my microphone. Teddy the dog, the famous dog, the most famous dog in America, is underneath the desk, curled up in his cave beneath my feet. And I'm starting to think that if the ASPCA heard that Teddy has listened to virtually every one of my shows for the last 4 years, and he's only 4 years old, and if Obama hears that my dog has had to listen to, let us say, patriotic conservative values for the last 4 years, who knows, but the new Obama government just might seize Teddy in order to deprogram him. God only knows what's coming in this country. Again, I say the big stories today are the stem cell debate, pulling out of Iraq, and the failures of Barack Obama. Let's start with the stem cell debate. Today, Obama signed yet another executive order reversing Bush's limits on embryonic stem cell research. Now, I've heard all the arguments. I've heard them pro and con, and I'm not like a rigid guy on these things. Yes, I'm trained in science, but I'm not rigidly a scientist. Yes, I'm fundamentally a human being who understands the sacred nature of life and that it begins at conception. Now, why do I say that life begins at conception? I want you to go down this garden path with me and ask yourself, are you willing to listen to what I'm about to say to you with an open mind, or is your mind closed? I want you to understand what I'm saying to you. Let us look at what happens to a tomato seed. When you plant a tomato seed and a sprout begins to pop out of the earth, we all understand that life has begun right there. You don't yet have a whole tomato, but you're not going to argue that that tomato sprout is not God's sacred energy, and God's sacred energy is sacred. Now, so you have a tomato sprout. If you kill that tomato sprout, do you not deny the growth of a tomato? Of course that's true. So how can you sit there with your double talk and say that at conception, because it's only an embryo, it's not yet a human being? You take an embryo, you take a life. And so therefore, ladies and gentlemen, we're all in favor of curing diseases. But as you well know, scientists are businessmen and they're liars. They're lying to you that if only you let them kill more babies and cull more embryos, they're going to cure everything from Alzheimer's to the common cold. It's utter rubbish, number one. It's all utter rubbish, number one. It's simply to promote the abortion industry. That's why the Barbara Boxers of the world are jumping up and down today. That's why that hag from Colorado celebrated today, because they've just gotten billions of dollars over the next 4 years from the abortion racket pumped into the Democrat Party. Furthermore, there are now developing alternatives to stem cell research which do not destroy human life. Did you hear what I said? Ever since this debate began, new developments have occurred. There are new alternatives to stem cell research which do not take human life. Shouldn't we be investing money in these instead of buying into the radical culture of death? Aren't we heading into the brave new world, such as the one described by Aldous Huxley, in which human beings are decanted instead of being born, where the most dirty word was viviparous reproduction? Read your Brave New World all over again. Now, if you care to argue this with me, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. You're listening to the most powerful talk radio show in the world. It is the Savage Nation. And I'm going to repeat that to you. This may not be the largest show, but it is the most powerful show in terms of the kinds of people who listen to the show, whether they fall on the left or the right side of the spectrum or right along the middle. The fact is, most of the people who choose to take time out of their day to listen to me pontificate and give you my opinions are people who think for themselves. And I invite you to think for yourself by dialing 1-800-449-8255. I want to go to the fundamental point of today, which is that hag from Colorado, some congresswoman, had the nerve to say that the legislature has no right to tell scientists what to do. Well, that is utter rubbish. Mengele was a Nazi scientist, and he was doing what he wanted to do, which was taking human beings and conducting experiments on living human beings. Now, certainly there are scientists who are evil. Remember Dr. Death? The man who was terminating life. Now, he was doing what he thought was best. I forget his name already. Beowulf, do you recall his name? Kevorkian. Kevorkian was a scientist. He was a doctor. And he was taking human life. Well, it took the legislature to stop him from taking human life. Because there are scientists who are insane or evil, just as there are any other crazy people in any profession. So let's not put scientists on a pedestal. Those days are long over. The days of Albert Schweitzer and the days of that type are long gone. What you have today is something entirely different. So we do need to control scientists, and we do need checks and balances in science as well as we do in the government. And that's why I say to you, it's utter rubbish to listen to this crap. That we don't need to tell scientists what to do. I've heard this before. This comes right out of the protocols of the abortion racketeers. They are the ones behind stem cell research. They are the people who put Obama in office along with many others, and they are the reason you must understand what is going on. Again, if you care to discuss this, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. I am taking calls from around America, Dallas, Texas. Bruce, you're the first up on this day. Go ahead, please.
God bless you, Mike. Where would we be without you? This stem cell research is absolutely another left-wing attack on our morals, our values, and life itself. And the Republican Party has let we conservatives down. Thank God for you, Mike. Where would we be without you?
Well, because I'm a trained scientist who has the heart of a humanist, okay? Very rare in this world to be able to understand both worlds. I'm certainly in favor of advancing scientific knowledge, but not at the cost of reducing our humanity. As far as I am concerned, stem cell research is a disaster for the human being, and I would expect Obama to have done this. And I say that for a reason. Obama is practicing every darn tenet of the radical left. He is by no means a man ushering in simply democratic values. The man is ushering in radical left-wing values. He is following every protocol of the far left. In fact, there's a phenomenal article from Clive Crook of the Financial Times entitled, "Why Obama's Left-Leaning is No Tactical Feint." And that is up on michaelsavage.com. And he's written this. He said, "Barack Obama's first budget showed him to be more of a left-leaning liberal than I and many others, skeptics and admirers alike, had previously supposed." So in other words, Obama is introducing every dream wish of the radical left. If this is what you think you wanted when you voted for him, I disagree with you. Many of you voted no more Bush. Many of you said no more Republicans, no more of the cronyism. I understand that. But you didn't ask for Karl Marx, did you? Did you want Karl Marx on Air Force One? Did you vote for Vladimir Lenin? Is that who you voted for on Marine One? Well, that's who you got. I'll be right back. Savage.
President Obama, who now is in his fourth executive order in promoting the destruction of or the dehumanization of unborn children or embryos or fetuses, after a while he begins to see a pattern. That which is unborn, that which is newly created human life, has very little value in the eyes of this president.
I agree with Republican Representative Chris Smith, who is the only one that I've heard who has said it like it is. Now, I want to say to you again that I believe in scientific advancement. I understand the value of medical research, and I respect those who conduct legitimate science and legitimate medical research. However, I must tell you there should be a firewall between scientific research and the destruction of embryos for scientific research, because you talk about the liberals' fear of a slippery slope. There is no more slippery slope than the destruction of human life. Oh, they're big to tell you that you can't stop a drug dealer who put 50 pounds of cocaine in his trunk, because although he may be guilty of putting the illicit substance cocaine in his trunk, we can't have a government intruding on various amendments of our Bill of Rights, because after all, you're on a slippery slope and you may wind up losing all your freedom. I've heard that argument ad nauseum. Well, what about the argument that when you permit the destruction of human life for research, you're on the slippery slope of devaluing human life in general? On this point, I, Michael Savage, agree totally with the Pope, who is the only religious figure in the world worth his salt as far as I'm concerned. I have not heard one other major religious figure talk about the sacred nature of human life. And I think this cuts across all political orientations, all sexual orientations, all racial considerations, and all species considerations. Human life is the essence of the reason for us being here, and the only reason for us to have a civilization. And the minute you start assaulting and assailing the sacred nature of human life, you're going to devolve and devalue all of humanity. That's one man's opinion. And now I'll go to the callers here on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255, but I've never heard a bigger ball of horse dung than being told that scientists must be left alone, that government has no right to intrude on these wonderful scientists. What is a scientist but a human being? As you well know, human beings can be good, bad, or indifferent. Why must you assume that because a man has a medical or a PhD degree, he is necessarily above the rest of you? Where did that enter into the puzzle? That's insane. There are great scientists, good scientists, poor scientists, rotten scientists, corrupt scientists, and absolutely evil, inhumane scientists. Need I go back to Kevorkian? Must I go back to Mengele, the evil German doctor who performed experiments on young Jewish children while they were living, tortured them while they were living in the name of science? Shall I delineate for you the kinds of experiments that were done in Nazi Germany? I will not do that. I am not going to provoke emotion from you in order to make what I consider to be a very rational argument. I don't need to go to the emotional to make a rational argument. Joe in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Hey, Mike. I refer you and my fellow listeners to Robert J. Hooks, published in the 20th century, and it just amazes me. My mind is reeling that books like The War Against the Jews, all of these books that have documented the atrocities of the communists and the Nazis are so pertinent today. And then
Let's stop for a minute. Let's not make it about Jews. The world doesn't revolve around Jewish people. The world revolves around human people, okay? What we are talking about is stem cell research. How does that connect up with what you just said?
Okay, it connects up in that Lifton points out so methodically how well-meaning, do-gooding, enlightened liberal people became the tools of the Nazi war.
In other words, good Germans became bad Germans. In the attempt to do good, they did very bad indeed. Is that what you're saying?
Dr. Mengele's, exactly.
And well, you heard me talk about Dr. Mengele. He was arguing that he wasn't doing it to torture children. He wasn't doing these things to the children, like dipping them in ice to see how long they could stay alive until they finally died when their hearts stopped. He wasn't subjecting them to radical heat while they were living, young little children, 3-4 years old, to see how long they could live in an oven until they finally exploded and died. He was doing that in order to see how long a human being could live in a desert. Isn't that true?
Absolutely. And it's all.
He was trying to see how long the Wehrmacht could survive in the desert. He was trying to see how long the Arctic soldiers, the noble Arctic Nazi soldier, could survive in the Arctic environment. And in order to do that, he needed human guinea pigs. And what the heck is another Jewish child? So what you're saying is the stem cell research argument connects directly to these vile Nazi experiments.
Exactly. It's the same.
Thank you. And I did it better than whoever this guy Lifson is. I never heard of him. New York City, WR. Linda, you want to chime off? Go ahead, please. Linda,
yes, hello.
Go ahead. You're on the radio. Fire away.
Okay, I just wanted to say, with the pro-life movement, I'm Catholic. I count as almost 12,000 young women with a crisis pregnancy center. Planned Parenthood is in it all for the money. They put all the money.
Wait, hold on. Slow down now. Are you agreeing with me that this has almost nothing to do with science? It has everything to do with greed and profit as seen through the eyes of the Planned Parenthood industry.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. You're right on the mark.
Yes, and I know that. And I'll tell you what's coming next. George Bush, despite all of his flaws, did several things that will enamor him with me forever. One of them was he used an executive order for very good. He stopped late-term abortion, which, as you well know, is infanticide. Mark my words, this man Obama, this junior college professor faking it as president, this interloper on Air Force One will make late-term abortion the law of the land. And champagne corks will go off in every feminist household in this country to the detriment of the human race.
Savage.
In olden times, nature allowed us only to have twins or perhaps triplets or so. Today, we can create scores, yes, scores of identical individuals. We can manufacture men and women in batches. Think of it. An entire factory staffed with the product of one single egg. 96 identical individuals working 96 identical machines. At last, society really knows where it stands.
Mm-hmm. That's circa 1956 from the CBS radio workshop when CBS was still doing great radio. And it is a presentation of Aldous Huxley's book, Brave New World, where an actor is acting out a government official boasting about how humans can make 96 individuals that are identical. Because there is no longer human reproduction, that is viviparous reproduction. It is all done nice and clean by the government. And as you well know, Barack Obama is a big government guy. And since he now thinks he can run the banks and everything else, why shouldn't he also run reproductive rights? Now, of course, Rome was not built in a day. And as you well know, babies have to crawl before they can walk. And before you can make viviparous reproduction illegal, well, first you have to crawl, and then eventually you can walk. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We are in the second trimester of this hour. Let us go to our callers. Let's begin with Lorna in Chicago, Illinois. Lorna, God bless you. Welcome to the program. Lorna, yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Michael, I just want to say this. A year and a half ago, my son had a motorcycle accident, and he's quadriplegic now. And to give this false hope to people like him, even for someone like me, as his mother, I could say, all right, let's go ahead and give a chance for you to do this. But no, I would sacrifice. Why should a baby die for for my son to walk. I would sacrifice that because I know it's the wrong thing to do. And why? Why put out all this false hope to people that they're going to
believe? I think the operational element of your heartfelt commentary is the false hope, because it is false hope. I've heard all of this rubbish before. Every time one of these fronts for the abortion racket gets up, they say that it could lead to a closer cure for, and they list all the diseases. I've heard this my entire life. Now, there were many years that I was in the scientific world. I'm not Jonas Salk. I'm not a great discoverer in science, but I'm well enough trained with a real PhD from a great university to tell you I know something about the scientific world, and most of it is about business, as is everything else in America and the world today. And science has promised an awful lot and delivered very little. The fact of the matter is that there used to be a statement going around in the world of science that more money has been made on promising the cure for cancer than virtually anything else, which is why organizations such as the National Cancer Institute, they every year that they went out on a fundraiser said, we're this close, we're this close, we're this close. Well, I wish they were this close. And certainly some advances have been made, and God hopes that they can make the advances that we hope they can. But there's always far more promise than there is delivery, Lorna, and I understand what you're saying. God bless you, and I pray to God for your son that he does recover from that. And this comes from a personal understanding of the situation as well. And I'm not going to pull your heartstrings by talking about what it is to have a family member who is hopeless, who you hope for, because I know what that is all about, because I lived with it from the time I was a child. I know what it is to have a family member who is hopeless, who you hope against hope will recover and become so-called normal. We all hope for the impossible. We wish for the impossible, but it's extremely cynical for the abortion rackets to find a few low-life politicians who will sell their vile industry as nothing more than false hope. 1-800-449-825. Moreover, you can get cells from other human tissue. It no longer has to come from embryonic tissue. That's the important thing for you to understand is this. It's not either or. You can have all of the scientific research along this line that you wish without sacrificing embryos, because you can derive these cells from skin cells, for example. This was not true a few years ago. Now, the whole reason the left is pushing this is because the abortion racket is behind it. Do you understand this? Michelle in Michigan seems to understand it. Go ahead, please. Michelle, go ahead.
Yes, I just wanted to, and I mean, I completely agree with you from working on the adult side. It is about what do you want the cells to do? And, I mean, if you want the cells to, I mean, you can't create an organ outside the body yet. So, I mean, if you want the cells to repair and build substrates that can build between one neuron, another neuron, a branch, so that the neurons can crawl across, you know, and help out the spinal cord injuries, like
yes.
The last caller,
yes.
Then the adult stem cells can do that. And they
Hold on. You are a cell researcher?
I'm on the adult side. I work for a company.
Well, when you say adult side, what do you mean? Adult cell research?
Adult stem cell research.
God bless you because you're a godsend for me and millions of people listening to the Savage Nation. My good lady, please explain what an adult stem cell is and where it is derived from.
So the adult stem cells, first of all, most so commonly, they're derived from bone marrow. They're also from cord blood, peripheral blood, fat stem cells, which have just recently come across, and the skin stem cells. But basically every tissue part in the body has resident stem cells, and resident stem cells can regenerate any tissue that is part of that tissue of origin.
So, Michelle, we no longer need embryonic stem cells?
I think the question is what you want the embryonic stem cells to do.
Why do they argue that, of course, we know that adult stem cells can be used to create lines, but we must have embryonic stem cells because they are superior? Is that true or false?
I think that's false.
Why do you think that's false?
Because the route that I've seen the embryonic stem cells take right now, embryonic stem cells, and they've shown it in animal studies, if you take pure embryonic stem cells right out of culture and you haven't differentiated them, they're in their undifferentiated state. And they're also, I mean, the embryonic stem cells come from in vitro fertilization clinics.
Right.
They're less than 5 days old. So you take them, just the embryonic stem cells, the round spheres, and you put them in to animals. They form teratomas. So they become cancerous. So what they have to do is they have to so they keep them in this undifferentiated state so that they can, you know, grow up lots and lots of them, and so they can treat lots and lots of different people. That's the idea of it.
But you, wait, hold a minute, Michelle. You're fundamentally trained in what? What is your field of learning?
Engineering.
What, bioengineering?
Yeah.
So you trained in bioengineering, but are you a cell scientist? Would you say?
Oh, I've always gone on the cell side.
All right. So you're a brilliant young lady who knows this field inside and out. Do you have a political bias in this discussion?
I have a, you know, personal religious bias, but politically, no, I'm...
All right. So you are a scientist, but you're also a person who believes in the sacredness of human life. I hear that. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. And so they're not incompatible.
No.
You see, you've made the most important point of the day. I mean, I said it in a generic fashion earlier. For the last 42 minutes, I've been trying to make that point, which is that I am for scientific advancement, but I'm also cognizant of what happens when you start to deny the human element here. You start to look away from the human cost of scientific research, and you wind up with Mengele playing with human life. Isn't that fundamentally what you believe?
Yeah.
Okay. Michelle, I want to keep you on the show for a few minutes. Just tell the people what you mean by you're a cell researcher. Tell young people listening to the show what that means.
So what I'm trying to do is bring cell therapy, adult stem cell therapy, and make a difference in everyone's lives. And, I mean, we're looking at cardiac, vascular, saving limbs, and also, and eventually neural when we...
Okay, but again, for the average listener who doesn't have any scientific background, you're on the same wavelength as those doing stem cell research, meaning cells from embryos, only you're saying you can derive these stem cells from adult cells rather than from embryos. Isn't that all you're saying?
Well, better yet, from your own cells.
Your own cells. So if a person has an illness and, let us say, a spinal cord injury... Please explain what you mean by that.
So the idea on the adult autologous side, which, I mean, is very safe. You take your own cells, you get a little prick from your iliac crest, and then your own bone marrow cells are expanded, you know, under scientific discovery, you know, trying to understand which ones you want. But that's what I basically do day in, day out, is try
now,
to
do you work for a commercial venture?
Yeah.
You do. You work for a company. We're not going to ask you the name of the company. But it's a company that's attempting to use adult stem cells rather than embryonic stem cells. Isn't that more or less what you're saying?
Correct. And we're in clinical trials. I mean,
who funds your research, Michelle? Who do you get your research funds from?
We're public.
You're a public company. I wanted to make a donation to Michelle's scientific research, could I do that?
I mean, you can trade stock. I mean,
I want to send a donation to Michelle. I think you're a great person and you're the hope. You're one of the great hopes for this society that you're young, you're a scientist, you're brilliant apparently, and you're also a believer in humanity. It doesn't get any better, Michelle. And if I were to make a donation to an organization, I would like to make it to someone, an organization that would fund Michelle. So I'll tell you what, Michelle, if you'll stay on the line, and we could speak for hours, but I'm afraid that we're going to risk losing the general listener who doesn't have any training in science and may be lost. And we'll summarize together in a moment. But Michelle, before you leave us, you're going to give my guys your email address, and I'm going to try and, you know, hook up somebody to call you or whatever and make a donation to your company if we can, or buy stock in your company if that's what I need to do, okay?
Okay.
Michelle, by the way, what is the name of your company? Watch the stock jump in a down market. Watch this. What's the name of it?
I don't know. I mean, you got to do everything upon your own beliefs and everything.
No. You know what? You're right. I shouldn't give out the name of the company. I don't want people to believe that I'm making any money from this because I've never met you before. Is that correct or incorrect?
Oh, correct.
We do not know each other. You're a random caller who listens to the show. Let me summarize for the listener, and then you can tell me if I'm correct in summary. We're having a debate today about stem cell research. Why? Because our new president, the junior college professor, the far-left radical Obama, has written an executive order today saying that, presto magico, we're going to use embryos to derive stem cells for scientific research. This was illegal until now. You are saying you're in favor of scientific research of this nature, but it is unnecessary to kill embryos to derive stem cells, that these stem cells can be derived from adult tissue as well, including tissue from the person's own body. Isn't that more or less what you're saying?
Correct.
Well, it doesn't get any clearer than me figuring things out. And I've been given a gift from God, which is the gift of explanation. And I want to say this to you, Michelle. You're doing God's work, and I hope you know that. I don't know how you got to where you are in what you're doing, but no matter what influences come flying at you, no matter how you are tempted to think your work is not worthwhile or that people tell you you're an idiot or why you're wasting your time or you could be rich if you went down to and the embryonic stem cell research company in Atlanta, whatever, stay with what you're doing, Michelle. You're doing God's work.
Thank you.
And stay on the line because I'm going to send you a very wonderful present. This is the Savage Nation. I'll be right back.
Savage.
One by one, the eggs are transferred from their test tubes into these larger decanters and moved along to the labelers. Carefully labeled as to heredity, date of fertilization, sex, name, serial number. Now, here is where we actually predestine and condition. Nothing is so unstabilizing to society as unhappy people. We avoid all that by preconditioning our embryos.
Preconditioning our embryos, isn't that every social engineer's dream? You don't really want malcontents in society, miserable, nasty conservatives who believe in borders, language, and culture. What you really want are happy little citizens who believe in the Obama way, who will follow Obama all the way and never question the Obama way, because that way is the better way. The Obama way is the only way. And the people who don't believe that, well, they're the malcontents who are very bad for society. This is the Savage Nation. Let's go to Elliot in New York on WOR. Go ahead, please, Elliot. You're on the air.
Hey, Michael. Michael, I'm a stem cell recipient and a cancer survivor because of it.
So what do you want, a medal? So
no.
You think, the way you said it, that ends the argument, right?
No, I think they were adults.
But you see, Elliot, this is beyond Michael Savage and Elliot in New York. This is about the course of human societal evolution. And as you just heard, we certainly all wish you well and all cancer patients well and Parkinson's disease patients well and stroke patients, etc. But the question is, why should we be spending money on embryonic stem cell research when you just heard that adult stem cells could produce just as valid lines of cells?
Well, that isn't so. That isn't so. The point is that we know what adult stem cells can do, and we can probably learn even more things to do with them. What we don't know is that embryonic stem cells probably hold potential far beyond what adult stem cells can do.
Why do you say that? What do you mean we know?
The scientific community knows that.
But why do you say they know that when there are those in the scientific community who would argue the contrary?
Oh, I don't think they'd argue the contrary. They just are willing to pursue one route rather than broaden the horizon.
So you're not concerned at all with the social costs of the scientific research. You're only concerned with the ends, and you're saying the ends justify the means.
No, I didn't say that.
Yes, you are. You're saying that the ends justify the means, and it doesn't matter how many embryos are killed as long as there are advancements made in science.
That's what you're saying. I'm not.
Well, isn't that what you just argued? You began by saying that you are the recipient of embryonic stem cells and you're a cancer survivor as a result. Long pause, meaning that's the end of the discussion. I think it's the beginning of the discussion.
I didn't say I received embryonic stem cells. I said I received adult stem cells.
Well, I didn't hear that, Elliot. It sounds as though you said embryonic stem cells.
No, I received my own autologous stem cells, which are my own adult stem cells.
So wait a minute. So you're making my point.
It is well taken. Adult stem cells do have a...
Either I'm going crazy or you've changed your argument. Didn't you start by arguing that embryonic stem cells are what saved you?
No. No, that's not what I said. What I said was adult stem cells saved me, but there's a limitation as to what they can do.
All right, so we're basically agreeing with each other, but with two contentious SOBs, and we like to argue. That's the problem.
I don't like to argue. I think scientific research should broaden itself and not be constricted by religious beliefs, which has always interfered with science.
But again, you see, you're confusing religious beliefs with societal concerns, or you're confusing religious dogma with rational societal fears.
That religious fears far outweigh societal fears.
Well, let's go to the extreme then. What about Mengele conducting human experiments in Nazi Germany?
I don't think it has anything to do with current stem cell research.
But why is it that so many of us do believe that Mengele conducting human experiments is the end result of unbridled usage of embryonic stem cells and the disregard for human life in general? Why do you think we feel that?
Because Mengele wasn't using stem cells. He was working on human beings who had feelings and who were living and who were victims of a political movement. Embryonic stem cell research has nothing to do with that.
And well, why do you say nothing when we know that an embryo is a human being yet to be born? You see, that's where you and I probably disagree.
Where we disagree. That's where religion comes.
Wait, hold on. Do we disagree on that? You're saying an embryo is not a living organism.
An embryo is not a living organism.
Not a living organism. Would you call it a dead organism?
It's a conglomeration of cells.
So in other words, if an infant smiles or laughs, it's not feeling anything. It's just, it has gas. Is that it?
I didn't say that.
No, I've met many, many people like yourself when my children were young when I'd show them my infant laughing, they'd say, "Isn't that cute? He's not laughing. He has gas." No, I've met the same kind of inhuman response before. Elliot, I wish you well. Thank you for calling the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Executive order I am about to sign, we will bring the change that so many scientists and researchers, doctors and innovators, patients and loved ones have hoped for and fought for these past 8 years. We will lift the ban on federal funding for promising embryonic stem cell research.
Yay!
Nature allowed us only to have twins or perhaps triplets or so. Today we can create scores, yes, scores of identical individuals. We can manufacture men and women in batches. Think of it. An entire factory staffed with the product of one single egg. 96 identical individuals working 96 identical machines. At last, society really knows where it stands.
Well, we just heard our junior college professor pretending to be president, presenting another one of the codexes of the radical left, which is embryonic stem cell research, when we know that adult stem cell research is perhaps just as viable without the moral ambiguity or moral problems. And we played for you an audio clip from a radio presentation of Brave New World circa 1956. And I will now enter the discussion by telling you that Brave New World was one of my favorite books when I was a younger person. I loved Huxley. In fact, I was so enraptured by Aldous Huxley's work, like everyone else first reading Brave New World. I said, who is this man that could write such a chilling science fiction novel where babies are no longer born inside a woman's womb but are made inside a factory? And there are alphas, betas, gammas, and deltas, meaning that the social engineers, the liberal social engineers of the future, did not want the random nature of human birth. They wanted the precise nature of scientific birth, where they could control what type of individual was being made. A certain number of alphas, meaning the highest intelligence, a certain number of betas, a lesser intelligence to do more menial work. And the delta then was interfered with during the embryonic stage in order to make a lesser intelligence so they could do even more menial work. And, of course, the lowest level being the gammas, they had their embryonic fluids, let us say, degenerated by chemicals to such an extent that they were happy doing the dirtiest of work in society. And so there was no longer any social unrest in this scientific vision where there were alphas, betas, gammas, and deltas. And Obama has taken a step along that road, in my opinion, towards this brave new world of the alpha, beta, gamma, and delta world. Now, we hear it's going to cure this disease and that disease, and we all hope all these diseases eventually find their cures. But we are arguing today that while it may be noble, which we don't think it is, because I know more about this than you may imagine, all of this talk about embryonic stem cell research is being generated by the abortion industry. The abortion industry, which was somewhat chastened by George Bush, the abortion industry has uncorked the dom tonight because the fortunes that they are about to make again, which they once made under the Clinton regime, are going to be flowing into their coffers. You see, with this new call for embryos to conduct research, there must be a call for more embryos. And the only way to get more human embryos is to perform more and more and more abortions. We need whole factories of fetuses aborted. We need entire busloads of fetuses for the mad scientists to play with. And so that's why I say be very careful indeed if you are celebrating today, because you may not be celebrating tomorrow. And we've been talking about this, and now we're going to go in another direction in our discussion of embryonic stem cell research on the Savage Nation. I have heard that the entire reason or the entire all of the elements that oppose embryonic stem cell research are fanatics, religious fanatics. You heard a caller in last hour imply that without using the phrase fanatics. But the implication was if it wasn't for those darn Christians who believe in the sanctity of human life, why, we'd have a brave new world. Well, what about all of those darn Orthodox Jews out there listening to this show? What about all those darn Muslims out there and those darn Buddhists out there and those darn Hindus out there? Would you like to chime in on this discussion and tell us what you think? What does your religion teach you about embryos and whether or not they are sacred? When does human life begin, my Buddhist friends? When does human life begin, my Muslim listeners, my Jewish listeners, bless you all? When does Allah tell you that human life begins? And if you think I'm doing this out of sarcasm, you are mistaken. I am doing this out of a desire to unite the religious people of the world in the right way rather than in the wrong way. I am doing this in the hope that the religious people of the world can finally find themselves together rather than at odds. I am doing this in the hope that Muslims and Jews and Christians and Buddhists and Hindus can put down the swords of suspicion and be drawn together in the things that they believe and drawn together by the things they believe and drawn together to protect the things they believe in. In the name of God, I beg of you to call this show and tell the world, because you're never going to get another chance in your life to get on a radio show, and tell the world what your religion teaches you about embryos, about abortion, about brave new worlds right now on the Savage Nation. I'm impassioned about this because I know what I'm talking about and I know where this will lead. Oh, listen, let me tell you, it's been said in many times and in many ways, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. And never have I seen an issue that more clarify, that is more clearly defined by that phrase than this embryonic stem cell discussion. The road to hell is paved with good intentions. I am not suggesting that all of the people who are cheering today about Obama's executive order, here is a man who's ruling with more executive orders in less than 60 days, is it? Than any president in the history of our free country or once free country. Here is a man who thinks he is a dictator who is allowed to, with the stroke of a pen, become a god unto himself. Now, I will go into the psychology of this president of ours, this imposter, in my opinion, the man who still looks extremely uncomfortable and out of place as he boards Air Force One or Marine One. He looks around as though to say, I can't believe I've gotten away with this. Because, ladies and gentlemen, any president who does not believe in the people, as this man apparently does not believe in the people, any president who keeps using the cheap tin slogan of change to sell a radical leftist agenda is not a president. He is a dictator. And I am telling you that only you stand between him and a total takeover of every aspect of your life from cradle to the grave. I have defined Obama and his minions as neo-Marxists. You think I'm doing it for effect? You are mistaken. For many years, we heard the phrase neocon. Neocon this. George Bush and his neocon that. The neocons got us into Iraq. Neocons did this, meaning the neoconservatives. And it stuck. Well, I, Michael Savage, am trying to make the phrase neo-Marxist stick. Because it is an apt description of this president. He is trying to rule by fiat, which is by decree, not by a democratic process. He didn't ask you to vote on whether or not this is the change you asked for. He says you gave him the power to do whatever he darn pleases. And he says, you want the change? Well, I'll tell you what, I'll take over the banking industry. You want the change by the executive decree and my signature today? We're going to have embryonic stem cell research. What will it be tomorrow? Professor Obama, what else is rattling around in that brain of yours? No one has ever said no to him. I have told you this before. He is perhaps the most dangerous fellow who has ever, ever sat in the White House. I say that because he has never had no said to him. From the time he was a child, the liberal white people, the guilty liberal white people, got on their hands and knees and praised him and have never, ever said a word to him that would make him doubt himself. Watch out for the man who does not doubt himself. Watch out for the man who has never been challenged. Watch out for a president who uses executive orders as though they are emails to a colleague. We are dealing with human life. We are dealing with a fragile democracy. And we are dealing with a crashed economy. It's bad enough that everything he has touched has gone up in smoke. And I will now delineate for you the fact that everything Obama has tried has failed. Shall I begin with the economy? Have any of the bailouts that he has tried worked? No. There's been a downward spiral of the economy with his socialist policies. We read today from articles around the world posted on michaelsavage.com that he has said we have failed in Afghanistan. All of the American men who have died, apparently to Obama, have died for nothing. They've died in vain. He has said the Taliban cannot be defeated. He is now going to negotiate with the Taliban in Afghanistan. He has said that he would eliminate earmarks in any budget. Remember when he was running with his hope and change? He said, I will go through every line item in the budget, and I will rule out any that are earmarked for special interest projects. Well, there's only 7,000. I would say he has an awful lot of work to do, but it's already too late for that. He has failed to bring Kim Jong-il in line in North Korea. And now Kim Jong-il has said if we put up any kind of attempt to stop him from firing a test missile, he will consider it war. The young professor Obama, with his idealism, his Fabian socialism, has failed on every front in which he has been tried. People said anybody but Bush. They didn't say vote in Karl Marx, did they? On top of all this, Professor Obama now wants to reward Castro, the dictator of Cuba, by ending the embargo on Cuba. And who started this embargo? Was it a mean right-wing conservative? Well, I don't know. His name was John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Perhaps by today's comparison, John Fitzgerald Kennedy was a conservative. In fact, I've said that on the show. that by comparison, Kennedy was a great Republican. This is the Savage Nation. The phone number is 1-800-449-8255. We are in the first trimester of this hour. I'll be right back.
Savage.
What is the sort of moral status of these embryos? Are we talking about life or potential life?
These are embryos which are created to give life. They're created for in vitro fertilization techniques. And then there are the embryos that are left over. These embryos are thrown away as medical waste. And so what we do with our bill and what the president did today is we allow the embryos to be donated by the couples they were created for to be used for research.
Isn't that so advanced and so noble and so liberal, Diana DeJet? Democrat, Colorado, lauding neo-Marxist President Obama for his stance on embryonic stem cell research by fiat, not by vote. Now, again, the abortion racketeers are very happy today because they're the big winners here. There's tons of money in embryonic stem cells, and there's tons of money in killing embryos for these stem cells. The trade in human organs, as we well know, is a disgusting thing, and we're against it. The trade in human slaves is horrible, and it's controlled by various governments, and they try to stop the gangs from using human beings in that way. But apparently, this government believes that although we're against human organ trade, the human organ trade, that's only for the Chinese government, and although we're against the trade in human slaves, we are totally in favor of trading human embryos because they don't believe life is found in an embryo. But I want to go back to a simple, basic a scientific observation. When you plant the seed of any vegetable, I'm going to use a tomato as an example. Now, one would argue that the seed is alive, but it's not yet a tomato, and I would agree with that. Just as the sperm in a man is alive, but it's not yet a human being, I do not believe life begins with a sperm. I would say the sperm is alive, but it does not represent a human life. However, once the tomato seed or the vegetable seed is planted in the earth and it is given sufficient water and has sufficient light, and a sprout begins to grow, we all understand that life has begun in that vegetable and that there is life there. Even though you don't yet have a tomato or a cucumber, we understand that you have a tomato or a cucumber in the making. And it's the same, my friends, who are confused by the government agents, that with a human being, once the sperm and the egg unite and create an embryo, we have created human life, that life begins at that point. Many of you have never heard it described in this manner because you've been brainwashed or brain-beaten or brow-beaten by those who have dogs to hunt and profits to make in this industry. I have neither profits to make one way or the other, nor dogs to hunt. I have no real win one way or the other. I just have an intuitive sense that we are on a disastrous road for our society. And if we permit this college professor who is experimenting with his radical agenda on a daily basis to do things with executive orders any further, you're going to find out that I was 100% right. And that's why I have said to my religious listeners, Jewish, Muslim, Christian, Hindu, and Buddhist alike, what does your religion teach you about this issue? Let us begin with Saeed in Houston. Saeed, welcome to the program. Thank you for calling.
Thank you, Michael, for taking my call. Yes, I'm a Muslim, and Muslim religion says the moment the sperm hits the egg, and that's the beginning of
life.
Well,
I'm sorry. You're a Muslim, and you have to go slower, Saeed. The Muslim religion teaches you what?
The moment the sperm hits the egg, that's the beginning of life. That's how God decides, and human being cannot sit on earth and say, oh, God didn't mean this or didn't mean that. This religion was created 1,400 years ago, and as of today, it's still the same. And
well, Saeed, so you and I may disagree politically. I'm sure we do in so many areas, no doubt the Middle East. And I found the same with many of my Muslim listeners, that we disagree on various issues about the Middle East, although lately I'm not so sure we disagree that much. But when it comes to fundamentals about life and society and raising of children and the relationships between there, these people and in the family, we agree, don't we?
Yes, we do. If you take a person from every religion, without any political affiliation, their basic understanding and basic beliefs are the same. Do not commit crime. Do not do this. Do not do that. Do not try to be a god. Because there's a purpose that God says, those are my decision and those are my authority.
I agree. This is absolutely man trying to be God. This is Obama trying to pretend he's God with the stroke of a pen. And that's why he is a doubly dangerous man. Maybe this proves he is not really a Muslim.
Well, I don't know about other people.
No, I just threw that out for an afterthought. But it also proves he's not really a Christian either. It means he's a bureaucrat, a dangerous bureaucrat at that, in my opinion. As I've said a thousand times, he's a neo-Marxist liberal professor.
Savage.
Where in olden times, one egg made one embryo, which made one baby. Today, we've improved on all that. Now the egg will bud, will divide from 8 to 96 buds. And every bud will grow into a perfectly formed embryo, and every embryo into a mature baby, making 96 human beings grow where only one grew before. Progress.
Yes, and that may be Obama's next step, progress. Watch out for progressives. We are in the second trimester of this hour of the Savage Nation. We are, I should say, arguing over the stem cell issue, or shall I say, illuminating the stem cell issue in a novel way for the American media. And it is a novel discourse that we're having in the sense that most people in American media, while they understand that there is a controversy about stem cells, don't really believe it. Most of them are already living in the brave new world of buying the entire liberal argument on virtually every issue, which is that this is the modern way to go and only religious fanatics oppose stem cell research. Nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, if you just joined the show, you missed a phenomenally wonderful caller earlier. It was a young lady who's a scientist who works in developing stem cells from adult tissue rather than from embryonic tissue. So you don't have to be a scientist to understand the show. The issue is you don't really have to use embryos to develop stem cells. I'm totally in favor of stem cell research. I'm just opposed to stem cells derived from embryos. Why? Because you can derive stem cells from adult tissue, mainly your bone marrow, for example. There's no excuse for this. This is strictly a payback to the abortion industry, one of the supporters of Barack Hussein Obama's campaign. And so I ask you, if you are a religious person, to give us your religious viewpoint on this issue. Why? Because the opposition says it's only religious people who oppose it. Well, then let's hear from the religious people. Let's go to Don in Sacramento on the Savage Nation. Don, your opinion, please go ahead.
Hey, Dr. Savage, longtime listener. Love your show. Yeah, I'm a Messianic Jew, and I'm not...
Wait, hold on. What is a Messianic Jew? I don't even know what that is.
Okay, a Messianic Jew is a Jew that believes in Jesus Christ.
Well, hold on. You know, it's confusing because Jews believe in the Messiah. Does that fit in with you saying you're a Messianic Jew when you're a Christian? In fact, and God bless Christians, but why must you make believe you're a Jew?
Well, I'm Jew by blood, okay? Jewish by blood, okay? So I'm a Christian.
Well, that's okay. Then just say I'm a Jewish convert to Christianity. It would sound less offensive than Messianic Jew. It's as if you're saying that you're something that doesn't exist already. Jews are all Messianic believers. If they're believing Jews, they believe in the Messiah.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, well, okay, so we agree on that, because most Jewish people don't even read the Bible, and they don't understand that their own prayer book says... I was just on an airplane, and every time I fly, I read a prayer book. I got to tell you this, Don. People may not believe it or not. They may think I'm Mr. Cynic. But somehow, as they say, there are no atheists in a foxhole. I'm one of those guys that's not an atheist in a jet plane. And so when I take off, when I land, and occasionally along the way, when I look out at the passing clouds and I say, my God, this can't all be an accident. And I think I'm a little guy inside a little aluminum tube flying through the air. I say to myself, God is amazing. God is amazing. And I start to pray. And I pull out this prayer book, and in the prayer book it says that there's a Messiah. So therefore, when I hear Messianic Jew, I say it's just someone who doesn't even understand their own religion. But let's go past that. you are a believer in Jesus, and what is your opinion on this issue?
Well, it's what they're doing is committing absolute murder, and that's all there is to it. And, you know, it's an abomination. Life is life, and death is death. That's all there is to it. And, you know, what they're doing right now is destroying this country. Everyone that I know of, at least, is very angry about it. We're very upset. We want this guy out. We want him to be impeached.
Well, what I don't like is that this guy is doing this by executive order, one after the other, and the American people are sitting like a bunch of schmucks watching a dictatorship emerge in front of their eyes.
That's right. And you know what?
And I think it is time to start talking about impeachment. Somebody's got to get this guy under control. He's out of control.
Absolutely.
Thank you for the call. Yes, follow that line. You want embryonic stem cell research? Well, follow the line of rein in the president's extremist tendencies. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com has some amazing stories we haven't gotten to yet, but we are in the second trimester of this program, and we are of the hour of this program. There are other topics. One is, of course, the one we've been arguing over or discussing, the stem cell debate. We could also talk about the failures of Barack Obama, which are quite many, by the way. He succeeded at nothing. He has succeeded at nothing. He has conducted change, radical change, experimental change, socialist change, professorial change, but it's achieved nothing. And we have not yet talked about him saying that we have failed in Afghanistan. We cannot defeat the Taliban, and he is now going to negotiate with the Taliban. He has said that he will control North Korea, and now the maniac in North Korea, Kim Jong, mentally ill, has said that if we in any way attempt to stop his rocketry, he will consider it an act of war. Now, we heard that Obama would be tested by foreign powers in his early days. He's been tested and failed at every turn. He sent Hillary Clinton to Russia, and she made a fool of herself because her translator made a mistake in the word reset. Our relationship. Did you hear about that? Gaffe, scandal, mistake, stupidity, greenhorn mistake. She goes to Russia and she says to Russia, we must reset. Oh, how modern that is. So computer literate. So Twitter-like. So BlackBerry-ish. So with it. Let us reset our relationship. Unfortunately, the moron translator who was traveling with Hillary used the wrong Russian word for reset. And it was something quite embarrassing. It was something antagonistic. And, of course, the Russian press has had a field day with our green Secretary of State, the carpetbagger Hillary Clinton. So he's even failed on that level. There's not one area where Obama has succeeded. But don't tell that to his worshippers. Again, if you're a religious individual and care to chime in, I'd like to hear from you. I'd like to hear from a real Orthodox Jew, a real Orthodox Christian, a real Orthodox Hindu, because we've heard from an Orthodox Muslim who agrees with all of us on this issue, except those callers who don't agree with us. And that's what makes America great, which is political discourse and disagreement. And I want to remind you that a true democracy, you know what the evidence of a true democracy is? Loud, forceful disagreement in the political marketplace. When you hear no loud political discourse, you know you're living in a dictatorship. When you hear the Amen Corner agreeing with everything the president does, you know that it's over and the republic has died. As long as you can hear voices saying, I disagree with you, Barack Obama. I think you're terrible. I think you stink. I think you're wrong. I think you're crazy. Then you know you still live in an America. You still live in America where there's a hope, where we can still have political discourse. The day it becomes illegal or immoral or dangerous to disagree with the president is the day you've lost your freedoms, my friend. So stay tuned, because I am a lightning rod of change. I am a lightning rod of hope. I am a lightning rod of disagreement. I am a lightning rod of the changes that you are hoping for, which is a change for the better rather than a change for the worse. Sure, he's giving us change, but this is not the change that most Americans want. And I would say even those who voted for this college professor did not expect so much radical left-wing activism so quickly. Sure, they expected something other than George Bush or that sad old man John McCain, but they didn't expect the neo-Marxist agenda to be forced down their throat. That's not what they voted for. It's all a lie. I want to digress for a few moments because I've been hammering you pretty hard on this issue for a few hours now. I've had conversations with some strangers over the last few days, and I found out that I have listeners where I never knew I had them. I knew I had listeners far and wide, and I knew that the listeners ranged all over the economic scale and all over the ethnic scale and all over the political scale. And I also knew that I had many listeners behind prison bars, and that's because people who are trapped behind prison bars have very few options to exercise their minds. Many of the people behind prison bars never had formal education. Many of the people behind prison bars never had the opportunity to read and to try to understand for themselves what is going on. And they find my show, they may at the beginning not have understood, they would have said he's the biggest A-you-know-what in the world, but after they've listened to me for a while, they start to say, you know what, this guy makes sense on this, he makes sense on that. And they've heard me say that all of us are one mistake away from being locked up in this country. You've heard me say it. We have more people in prison proportionate to the overall population than any country on earth, and that's a very sad statistic. There are over 1 million people locked up behind bars, sometimes for minor infractions. No one is arguing that we should have tiers for the murderer, the rapist, the pornographer, the counterfeiter, the terrorist. No one is saying that. But there are too many people behind bars in this country, and they're thirsting and they're hungering for something from the American media other than talking about breasts and panties. Somebody talking about something other than a hockey puck flying into a cage. Somebody talking about something other than a moron swinging his arms and hitting a ball. They want to hear something about their life and the meaning of life and why they're behind bars and what they're going to do with their life when they get out from behind bars and how they can make a meaning out of their lives. And I am talking to you if you are in a prison cell or on a Gulfstream. And I know I'm talking to you if you're behind a prison bar or on a Gulfstream or in a Chevy or in a Prius. Why? Why do I exist? I exist, my friend, because you want me to exist. If you didn't want me to exist, I wouldn't be here. The reason I exist is because you need me. The reason you need me is because there's a desert out there. There's a desert in the American media, and I am wandering in this desert with you, not trying to make the Red Sea part, but trying to make you see within this Red Sea that you are a part of this sea of life. And this discussion today, if we never have another discussion about this, and I don't know that we will, I often don't get this worked up, but I'm very worked up because I have seen what happens with people who want to do good and where it can lead to. Watch out for the do-gooders. The do-gooders will nail you to a cross faster than you can say Roy Rogers. And they will do it in the name of progress. They will do it in the name of advancement. They will do it in the name of helping you, but you will be hanging from that cross and begging for mercy nevertheless. I am telling you that embryonic stem cell research is not a noble endeavor. It is the exact opposite. I am also telling you that adult stem cells hold as much, if not more, promise. And the only reason this college professor acting as president, with a stroke of the pen today, said to you, we are going to have embryonic stem cell research again, is because he's paying back yet another constituency, which is the abortion racket. The abortion racketeers have broken the champagne open today and are still celebrating as I speak, because they are going to make new fortunes again. I'll be right back. Savage.
Policymakers are not the ones to be making decisions telling scientists what type of research will find the cures. Instead, it's our job to really support all ethical types of cell-based research, and that's what the president reaffirmed today.
President Obama, who now is in his fourth executive order in promoting the destruction of or the dehumanization of unborn children or embryos or fetuses, after a while you begin to see a pattern. That which is unborn, that which is newly created human life, has very little value in the eyes of this president.
I agree with the latter, not the former. We heard the alpha and omega of the argument just now on the Savage Nation. Again, the only topic worth discussing today, in my opinion, has been the one that has jammed out the boards on the show this evening or this afternoon, depending upon where you're listening to me. I am right now broadcasting from a hidden location, Area 53 in America. As you well know, I normally broadcast from a certain location in the San Francisco area. Occasionally, I travel to Area 52 for my other secret studio. Today, tonight, this evening, tomorrow, I am in Area 53 on the Savage Nation. It doesn't matter when you hear this, whether it be morning, noon, or evening, whether the sun is out or the moon is out. The argument, the discussion is eternal and it's universal, which is what is the value of human life? What is the value of human life is what we are talking about. If we permit the government to decide what is the value of human life, I don't have to tell you where that might lead. And as I say to you, the road to you know where is paved with good intentions. So be very, very careful indeed as to what kind of powers you give policymakers with regard to deciding for you what is valuable with regard to human life. And that's why I've opened up to you, the listener, on the show. Now, I've asked religious people to give us their view. I did not say, if you are an atheist, what is your view? Because I didn't think I had many atheists who listened to me. But strangely enough, I do. And now out of San Francisco on KNEW, Mike wants to join in. Mike, welcome to the program. What is your view, my friend?
My view on this whole embryonic cell research is that I don't think it'd be appropriate to use embryonic cells and just use the adult cells.
Well, why is that?
Because I think that it's unfair and unjust to take away a human's life before it has any idea that it's getting ready to be out in the world.
Now, are you a religious person, or are you saying you're an atheist?
I am an atheist.
You're an atheist, but you're also a rationalist.
I'm conservative, if that's what you're wanting.
No, no, I don't know what your political orientation is, but you're saying life begins at attachment, I see you say it on the screen. So you agree with me that you put a seed in the ground, and when the seed sprouts, that's a sign of life. The vegetable will come from the sprout.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Mike. I appreciate the call. Anyone else want to chime in? We're jammed up here on the Savage Nation, as usual. If there's a great caller on this, we'll go to that caller. Let's go to Sin City, Las Vegas. Greg, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation. Now, you're in Las Vegas, where life has a different meaning than any other city in America. What do you think?
Well, Dr. Dissident, this is Citizen Dissident.
Hello, infidel.
Yes, sir. life begins at the point of fermentation.
Fermentation? Well, I've heard of another word for it, but fermentation works for me.
There, and it's proved in the book, which is the Word of God, in Luke 1:41. And those Christians out there that do study the Bible in depth will understand that. And
are there any Christians left in America, Greg? I saw CNN gloating this morning that there are fewer Christians than ever, and it's a dying religion. They were celebrating on CNN. The last I heard, there were over 1 billion Christians on the earth. When did they suddenly diminish in number?
Well, as you say, you repeat the lie long enough, or was it...
Well, Goebbels said that. Hitler's henchman, the publicist for Hitler, Goebbels, said that if you tell a big lie often enough, it'll become the truth. So if you keep selling neo-Marxism as hope and change long enough, enough morons hear it, they'll believe it.
Another thing is that I believe this is a step, as you call it, I wouldn't even call him a professor. He has no right even to be in that office. This is a step towards genocide, towards people that they don't want to depopulate the planet, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, I don't want to go there because I've read enough from the radical left. Let us talk about that for a minute, and I will go there. Bill Ayers, a good friend of Obama before it became very embarrassing to say he had been a good friend of Obama, even though they worked together in certain foundations, and even though they were close friends years ago. Bill Ayers, the radical bomber, good friend of Obama, had other radical friends in the Weather Underground and in other groups like that, radical leftists along these lines, who discussed killing over 30 million Americans during their radical days in order to bring about the social revolution they dreamed of. You're aware of that, aren't you?
Yes.
Yes, and it's embarrassing to talk about, I realize, because it's something that they would laugh off as a conspiracy theory, idiocy, craziness, paranoia, correct?
There is no such thing as a conspiracy theory. It is a conspiracy.
Well, I think that concludes the last caller of the hour on this topic on the Savage Nation. We have another big hour to go on this program. And with God's will and your listenership again tomorrow, again, I want to say to you, God's hand has been involved in every word of this show, including the callers. That young lady in particular, the scientist who is working on adult stem cells, was a call from heaven itself. I am so proud that she listens to this show, and I hope you've enjoyed this hour.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Yeah, I had an epiphany in cooking in my house. I got to tell you, I'm somehow influenced sometimes by stories. In other words, if I tell a story about Italy or Italian, I wind up eating Italian food. If that day I'm excited over an Indian story, I'll eat Indian food. Monday night, I had gone shopping at my local market. I would give out his name. He's a nice guy, but I don't want people to look for me there. And I said, I can't find calamari steaks. So he said, I got them in the back. They're frozen in a box. He took them out of the box for me with a hammer and a knife. He broke them apart. Then he has a machine. He put each one in a like a package that takes the air out and resealed it with the air out of it. And he gave me calamari steaks. It cost me less than $2 a piece. Can you imagine how much they cost even retail? I come home that night. I was in a mood for a calamari steak with mushroom sauce. And I've never had it served with mushroom sauce, but because the other member of the dinner wanted a steak, not calamari, I said, I want to make a mushroom sauce for the first time in my life. So I defrosted the calamari on the cold water. Never use hot water when defrosting virtually anything, because if you use hot water, you're partially cooking it, which is very dangerous. Only defrost using cold water. And then you take the plastic off, okay, then you dry and blah, blah, blah. You only cook them 3-4 minutes on each side in a very hot pan with very little oil, or else it'll get soggy. And make sure you got a little parsley chopped up. Anyway, I made a mushroom sauce that was so good. No butter, no cream, and I defy you to be able to discern whether there was cream or butter in it. I never had anything like it. I slept like a baby. I woke up feeling like I had velvet between my joints. I felt so good that I figured I needed to feel bad. So last night, I ordered bad Italian food from a local restaurant. It wasn't bad. It's old-style, like Bronx, Staten Island, Brooklyn Italian food, which is actually a pleasure compared to the upscale, white tablecloth, shishi, bad Italian food kind of restaurants that you find all over, you know, the suburbs. I'm talking meat sauce that's thick, like really heavy, you know, really heavy, like your grandmother made. Your grandmother, not mine. And I got a meat dish, a veal piccata. Then there was – I always eat the other dish on the table. Have you ever seen this going on in restaurants? This goes on for the last number of years. Like, men are on low-fat diets. I love to watch this in restaurants. Men over, like, 40. So the wife usually orders a meal that she knows her husband wants, and he orders something lean.
Oh, I'm doing – yeah, something with no salt and no cream, no butter. No, make it light. Make it light. No cream, no butter.
So he gets this lean dish. She gets this, you know, gut-busting, phenomenal dish on her side. Knowing that he's going to pick it up late. And the guy always eats her meal from his side. And she picks at his dish. She eats the lean dish off his plate. And he's every minute. The fork is the boarding house reach across the table to her dish. I love to watch this. It goes on consistently. So I overindulged. I had nightmares last night from the meat. If I eat meat late, one nightmare after another. I had a nightmare. I was on Broadway in San Francisco in my car, which is a great car, and it wouldn't go forward, only backwards. You ever dream like this? I try to go forward, and it would go backwards. So I said, I got to get this car parked because I'm leaving for Europe tomorrow. I don't know what I'm doing with Europe. Dreams are crazy. But my whole dream was about getting the car parked safely so that the dealer could pick it up the next day. But I knew if I left it on Broadway, they would tow it away that night in San Francisco. So I tried to back it down a street, and it was all full of coal. Oh, my God, what a horrible dream. So as I drove into San Francisco today, I went down that very street to see if my car would suddenly stop and only go backwards. No, but it turned out it was only a nightmare from the meet. Song from the years I spent on the Fiji Islands listening to Indian music on the squeaky radio.
And what Mercedes? Sister has Mercedes. Husband better earn her. I want Mercedes. Not Prius. I want Mercedes. Has Mercedes. Not easily, please. You're not a big man.
In 1815, the American commander Stephen Decatur, and we're talking 1815, sent to stop the Barbary pirates, that was the pirates of those days, in the Mediterranean. He captured the flagship of the Algerian pirates and forced an agreement. When the Algerians later repudiated the agreement, the British and Dutch bombarded Algiers. Now, today, the solution would be to bomb the port of Eyl, E-Y-L, which is the main pirate base on the Somali coast. That would stop it. But that would require a UN Security Council resolution. Oh, right. That's really going to happen. So we're wringing our hands. All the laws are written in favor of the pirates right now. The effort needs to be stepped up into a real military gear, bomb their cities, take their families hostage, and it's the end of the piracy. Now, if you'd rather I talk about an easy mushroom sauce instead of these affairs, fine. Fine. Years ago, there was a firm measures taken against pirates. An expert maritime writer, Dr. David Cordingly, wrote a book called Life Among the Pirates, and he said there would often be a show trial in London, Jamaica, Boston, or Charleston when they were captured. That was followed by a public hanging, and the bodies would be left swinging on the gallows at the entrance to harbors. Sailors would draw the conclusion that piracy was not a good career option. But today the authorities consist of petticoats rather than real warriors. And that's the story. So you take your 8 ounces of sliced mushrooms. They could be button or baby bellas, cremini. I like the whites. You chop them up. Don't quarter them, eighth them, and then even chop them again. You take 1 tablespoon of olive oil. You take a tablespoon of that Smart Balance if you don't want to use butter, which I don't use. You can use a half a cup of dry red wine, but I would prefer drinking it instead of wasting it in a sauce. Now, the important part of this recipe is the beef broth. I use organic beef broth. There's nothing like it. You don't want to use anything else. Now, on the side, you get 2 tablespoons of flour ready and 3 tablespoons of cold water. This is going to thicken your gravy. You get your salt, your pepper. You get a teaspoon of chopped parsley. I don't like dried. I like fresh. Take the stems off, chop up the leaves. You saute the mushrooms in the oil and the Smart Balance. Now you could add your red wine, simmer a few minutes. Then you add the beef broth, simmer a bit, about 5 minutes. You then take the flour and the cold water pre-mixed, and you whisk it, you know, till it's smooth. You stir that into the mushrooms while they're cooking until it's blended. Then it's almost done. Another minute, thickened. Bing. If it's too thick, add more broth. And then you add parsley and salt and pepper, and you got about 1.5-2 cups of a mushroom sauce that I think is unbelievable. And you could put it on steak, or you could put it on calamari, as I did. I loved it. That's why I'm talking about mushroom sauce. Because if I can't talk about how to run the U.S. Navy, I may as well talk about what I really know. I don't know anything, right? No, leave it to the guy with the iPod. He's the expert. Detroit, Michigan. Romero, you're on the Savage Nation.
Man, I've been listening to you for a lot of years. This is my first time ever getting through, and I'm a black Muslim calling from Detroit. I like your show, and like you said a lot of times in the past, you know, those so-called Muslim extremists and everything, man, they need to nuke them.
Romero, where have you been all my years? Where are you, my friend? You ought to be the spokesman for the Muslims in America. That's all I'm saying. I'm saying all religions are a stabilizing force in society. But when you have extremism like this, it's going to destabilize the world.
Exactly. And like I say, I'm around here in Detroit, and we got a big Muslim population over in Dearborn, and a lot of people get, you know, what's that word I'm looking for?
Miseducated. They're probably being brainwashed.
You know, I get along with everybody. You know, I go to Christian stores, I go to Muslim stores, I go to Jewish stores. You know what I mean? We don't never have a problem. But when you got people like Osama and the rest of his clan out there, they give us a bad name.
God bless you, man. Well, look, what can I say? I mean, this is what America... You see, when more and more people like you stand up and be counted, Romero, I think that there's hope for this country. Less divisiveness, more unity, more understanding that when we talk about radical Islam, we're not talking about people who practice the religion the way you apparently do. That's a different story. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.
Tennessee, J.D., you're on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, my friend?
Hey, Mike, long time, man. I've been listening to you for I don't know how long. Can never get through because you're the hardest working man in show business. But
love it, love it, love it. But, what made you call? What made you call tonight?
One Arm Frank is the number one stunner in your book. Man, I was in the military, and I had a guy that I knew, man, and his breath was so stinking, man. I'm talking about his car smelled like his breath. The interior in his car smelled like his breath. Even in the cold, we was trying to ride with him in his car. My car broke down. We had to let the windows down in his car.
And wait a minute. You're not saying he had one arm, are you?
You couldn't take it. And when you roll the windows up, it's like it was embedded in his interior. Everything. Man, you could smell him 10 feet away from it. That's how bad.
But I want to ask you something. I'm not being cruel in any way. Did he have one arm?
No, sir. No, sir. But I'll never forget the guy. This guy was from North.
Oh, no, but he had a breath on him that I say was a medicinal problem. Like you had to go to a specialist to cure this.
I don't know what, Mike, but his breath smelled like a sewer. It smelled like a bad. I remember.
Well, J.D., did you get the book yet? Did you? J.D., can you hear me? Did you get a copy of the book yet?
No, sir. This reading.
Well, you're going to. Hold it. Don't go away. Stay on the line. I'm sending you a free copy, but I want to read you and ask you if this is what you're talking about. I said, in those days. Blah, blah, blah. So One Arm Frank was a very sweet guy, but he had sick breath. Now, I want to tell you, there are bad breaths, and then there are very bad breaths, and then there are medicinal problems. This one had to be solved with a medicine that hasn't been invented yet. I remember one winter my old man was dropping Frank off at his home. Frank was in the passenger seat, and I sat in the back. It was -4 degrees out, but we had a ride with all the windows open. Did you ever meet a person like this? Whenever he spoke, the car filled with a nauseous fume. Are we going past the meat factory? No. Did we run over a small furry creature that got caught in the muffler and the smell shot up through the floorboard? Did I step on something? Nope. I mean, I took my shoes off. No, but it was only Frank talking. Okay, J.D., no, don't go away. I'm sending you a free copy of Psychological Nudity. Everybody loves that story. They don't understand that those, because I think that was before mouthwashes. Nobody, you know, J.D., that's another interesting side story here. In my father's generation, a man would not use a mouthwash or a deodorant. You know that.
Yes, sir.
If a guy used an underarm deodorant in my father's day and a mouthwash, you know that they felt he belonged in San Francisco.
Man, you're the best, Mike. You're number one in the nation.
No, I mean, if they caught a guy and they went in his bathroom, let's say they had to use the John, and they saw a roll-on deodorant and a mouthwash, they never talk to him again.
Man, I haven't seen this guy in years, but I'll never forget him because of his breath. Man, I've never smelled the person's mouth.
Hey, J.D., let me ask you something. Are you a musician by any chance?
No, sir. But I do.
Well, you sure have a musician's sense of humor. I got to tell you that. J.D., a free copy, Psychological Nudity, going out to you in Tennessee because you made me feel so good and laugh so hard. I got to tell you. That's a great call. That is a great call. You see, we can transcend politics, race, generations, all with what? The miracle of humor, the miracle of communication. It is a miracle. It's a miracle, and I'm gifted. I know it's a gift. It goes back, again, not to dwell on the past, but how did it start? And this is not in the new book, but it should be, because it's a very important story. I've told it once in 15 years. First grade, New York inner city school, play, auditorium. Now, I don't know if you know, there are some people who are terrified to give a speech in front of them. These could be tough guys, tough kids, murder, tough as nails. You put them in front of an audience, their face turns red. They can't say a word. They can't say anything. It's a gift. If you can do it, it's a gift, okay? It doesn't make you better than the other guy. It happens to be a thing you have. It's like another guy can run, jump, throw a basketball, whatever, fly a plane. But talking in front of an audience, so I didn't know I could do it. How do you know if you could do it? You have no idea. But although we were poor, my mother wanted me to look good, so she bought me a little blue suit. It was probably $9. This was before Dead Man's Pants, when we had less money. She bought me an actual suit that fit in my size. It was probably in Barney's Boys Town, wherever she saved money. So I had a little blue suit. So the teacher said to me, look, you're the only kid in the whole school with a suit. I said, I don't know. So she's, get the suit, bring it in, you're going to be the announcer for the assembly. I got up, I saw a sea of people, and I wasn't frightened. I enjoyed it. It was like a sea of faces. It's an interesting thing looking at an audience if you don't panic. It just looks like a sea, like a little waves chopping around in there. They don't look like people to you at that point. Anyway, I learned that I could talk to an audience, and that's how it started. That's all. That's all there was to it. And it was a gift that I had at that time, and that's all there was to it. Now, I'm going to move up one grade, two grade, three grade, four grade. Now, I was a short kid, and I had gone to school early. Then I skipped a grade. So I was younger and smaller than most of the kids. So if I'm in elementary school, and it goes up to the eighth grade in those days, there was no junior high. It was like 1 through 8, then high school, 9 through 12. There was no intermediary school where you learn how to have, you know, sex, whatever. In other words, it was right into the 8th grade. Now, picture this. So in this school of 1 through 8, K through 8, it was 1 through 8. There was no K. The K, you were home already with the grandmother who didn't speak English in kindergarten. There was no such thing as kindergarten because the mothers didn't work. You sat around and you watched them make Jell-O or whatever. So 1 through 8, you had kids now 5 years old in the first grade. And in the eighth grade, you might have a dummy who was also left back because of truancy and bad behavior who might be 15. So you had kids ranging in age from 5 to 15 in the same school. Now, picture me. I go in the bathroom. I'm in the fourth, fifth grade, and I have to go to the men's room. It was like terror, blackboard jungle. There were no monitors. There were no cops, no nothing. You might have a 14, 15-year-old, like, giant maniac in that bathroom, and you're this little kid who's got to go in there and do your thing. So I had to figure out how to go in there and come out with, like, not being killed. So I found out that I'd go in, and right away I'd arrest the guys. They were usually slower. Okay, admittedly, they might have been violent, but they were slow with it. So you had to, like, charm them rapidly. So I'd go in, a short little kid, younger. I have to use the bathroom. How do I get out of this terrible thing? I still have nightmares to this day. I don't like public bathrooms. I hate them. Really, it goes back to that trauma. Go in, look the big guy in right in the eye. I'm not going to threaten him, kill me. I'd tell him a joke. I'd look right in the eye and point at him and say, hey, listen.
Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of the Savage Nation.
I don't want to be too egg-headed, but there's a new story out that rotting eggs are the new Viagra. Now, I know you say this is crazy, but it was actually investigated. And the Italian scientists, of all people, report that the smell of rotting eggs gives men an erection.
In Napoli, where love is king, when boy meets girl, here's what they say.
Listen to this craziness. It's a bizarre finding, I admit it. Let me repeat it. They say that the smell of rotting eggs gives men an erection, and that this could help develop a more effective version of the sex drug Viagra. You see, it's a gas called hydrogen sulfide that's also released when eggs rot, and incidentally also released from the exhausts of cars with catalytic converters, but it's also given out by men just before they have sex. Yes, hydrogen sulfide. Tiny amounts of it are released by nerve cells in a man's private part to prepare it for intercourse, the study found. This gas, hydrogen sulfide, causes muscle cells in the region to relax, boosting blood flow and leading to a better erection. Viagra, though, harnesses a different chemical, nitric oxide, that gives users a boost in those parts.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
And they say that this discovery from the University of Naples in Italy made the finding in a study of eight men who had sex change operations. Well, all right. Study leader Professor Giuseppe Cirino said, we found that hydrogen sulfide is involved in human penile erection. Well, I would say it's, first of all, a study of eight men is not a large enough study, number one. And men who donate themselves, go for a sex change operation may not be the norm. But all right. He says that the hydrogen sulfide pathway represents a new therapeutic target for erectile dysfunction, and it should be possible in future to develop drugs that either deliver hydrogen sulfide or that control the hydrogen sulfide production. And the research was published in the scientific journal, The Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Some readers have commented. A man says, I can tell you right now I do not get an erection from smelling rotten eggs. A woman writes and says, so that's where I've been going wrong. Thinking all along that a nice perfume would turn a man on when I should have brought rotten eggs to the party. So there it is. That's the science of today coming out of Italy. But what do you expect from scientists in Naples who study men who volunteer for sex change operations?
How do you like your eggs in the morning?
I like mine with a kiss.
Boiled or fried?
I'm satisfied. As long as I get my kids.
I have a joke going around. I don't know if I could tell this on the air. I stop people. The dog is so cute. I'm walking the streets, let's say, of San Francisco on a nice night. Teddy, the dog. Some people will say, what kind of dog is that? Everyone, what kind of dog? That's a poodle. Oh, really? How come he doesn't look like a poodle? He's untrimmed. That's the way they look, uncut, blah, blah, blah. He looks like a teddy bear. So, wonderful. I said, yes, dogs are better than children. So they, right away they look at you like, uh-oh. What do you mean dogs are better than children? I said, for a couple of reasons. What are they? I do this to strangers for effect. Well, for one, they cannot become a junkie. So you see already, they laugh, then they smile, then they get nervous. The rest I don't want to say on the radio. Well, the main thing is there's no inheritance. That's number two. You can spend it all on yourself. There's no college fund. There's nothing. Three, you're not going to wake up in the middle of the night with a drug-crazed grandchild over your bed with a knife about to cut your heart out. You know, that happens in our country today. Whoever would have heard of it? Even if you wanted to do it in my day because the grandfather grabbed your cheeks too tight and turned them and says, yeah, good, and almost ripped your cheek off, you wouldn't do it because you suppressed yourself. Today they tell you not to suppress any urge at all. If it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? Whatever. Good luck to you. Feels good, do it. Do people really feel good if they act out all of their impulses, I wonder? I think about it. I'm a controlled guy. I mean, I let some I go, or, but I'm pretty uptight when it comes to controlling urges. You have to be. Otherwise, you die young. You have to. Do they live longer if you let out all your urges all the time? That whole idea, the hippie philosophy of, you know, if it feels good, do it. Don't repress any urges. Do you have any idea there'd be no civilization if there was no such thing as repressed urges? It's by repressing urges that you create a piece of art. It's by repressing urges that you sculpt. It's by repressing urges that you climb a mountain. It's by repressing urges that you become a great martial artist, I think. Now, all right, they'll argue that, no, by letting your urges out, you can do it better. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if anyone's done a study on it, nor would I care to even study it. But, I saw an interesting movie last night, skipping around because you're such nice people and you're a captive audience and have nowhere to go, so I'll tell you anyway. I'm going blind from too much. All day long I'm on the internet. I'm an addict. I'm an internet addict. I admit it. I have a problem. I try not to. I get up in the morning like this Mr. Natural. You know how far it's come to me? A guy who grew up on a Royal, like, portable, you know, hunting and pecking with no electronics. I get up in the morning, early in the morning, and right away, I think I'll go out and look at the air. I'll go on the boat. No, right to the computer. Before the coffee, like an addict, right down into the room like a dungeon. And I say, I got to stop this. It's already 2 hours later at 10 o'clock already. The eyes are blurry. And after the show, after dinner, I'm watching TV. I like to watch movies in bed. Lock the door, you know, turn on the alarm, make sure that the Glocks and the shotguns are loaded, whatever the joke may be. And you start looking for a movie. So last night I stumbled upon one called The Quest from like 1994 with Claude Van Damme when he was like, I think he was first starting out. The guy's was great then. Great body, incredible moves. And Roger Moore, who used to play, what was that he played? You know, Roger Moore was, he was a great James Bond, very, you know, debonair English guy. So it's about whatever it is. So there's a martial arts scene in there that catches you off guard. It's sort of a cartoonish movie, but that could be fun if you want to escape. Whatever you have to do is your business. And all of a sudden, you get caught off guard in the middle of this movie or toward the three-quarter point when they have martial arts contests on an island, secret island hidden away where it's fight to the death, basically. All of a sudden, it's like Russia versus Japan and that kind of thing. And you see the guys get up. So they probably picked one of the top sumo guys for the movie and one of the top kung fu guys. And, of course, it's orchestrated. But I truly have never seen such well-orchestrated kung fu moves in all the movies I've ever watched. And I'm not a great fan of the Hong Kong movies. I've watched them and enjoyed them. But I've never seen anything as well orchestrated as these. I couldn't believe it. I'm going to try and get the video, the DVD rather, just for that martial arts section. The guy who plays the Chinese, the guy who is the Chinese martial artist, does moves I've never seen done. Well, he moves like a snake, then he moves like a monkey. And then the guy who plays the Turk, who's the toughest of them all, this guy was awesome. The Turkey versus Russia. You know, then you see the Brazilian martial artist in that movie? Well, who knows what I'm talking? I'm rambling now from 1994. Who remembers a movie like this? So I was talking with someone before the show, just to jump back to something real now from a movie, now that I'm back in radio, because I really have gone through a lot of, so I didn't want to stay in it. I did. I couldn't take it anymore. It was a headache. I didn't like the political climate. I figured maybe it's time to exit stage right. Boom, it's over. I did my 15 years and walk away and forget it. That's it. You know, I did what I had to do, and look what we wound up with, Obama. Anyway, and the Clintonistas. The doorman is there, and all the Clintonistas are back. Probably, as I said earlier, maybe they'll bring the silverware back and the sheets this time. God, what if they give Bonnie Frank the Lincoln bedroom? Oh, my God. They'll have to call the Orkin man after that one. I don't like Bonnie Frank, not because of his sexual proclivities. It's his business. I don't like the guy's politics. They're really icky. This guy is a creep of the lowest order. I hope they don't make him the head of the FCC. So I was telling the people that now that I'm staying in radio, I'm going to do what I haven't done in 2.5 or 3 years, which is do law. I may, don't commit me to this, I may go on a speaking tour this year. A lot of guys in radio who are in the top five do it. And I don't blame them. I mean, they do it for the money and the glory, and I don't blame them. Whatever, that's their business. I don't do it because I hate hotels. I hate traveling. I just don't like the whole scene. I don't like the road show. It's very wearing on a person, particularly an older person, as I am. I'm not a kid. I mean, I may sound energetic, and I am, but I have techniques of keeping my chi energy that have a lot to do with being a lazy bum off air. You got to be lazy to survive. I think everyone has it backwards about the exercise and the run and schmun. I think they dropped dead from it, frankly, earlier, pushing themselves over the edge. Not a natural state for a man over a certain age to be running like he's being pursued by a lion. Who would perceive that a man over a certain age would run every day in a breech cloud, like through the wilderness? He only did that when he had to. Then when he got older, he was smart enough to secure meat. You know what I'm saying? And then he had a son to go hunt a lion. He didn't have to do it. That's my theory. I think the exercise thing is way overrated. I bicycle, truthfully, light every day, mild, come back breathing, and that's enough for me. You only swim, by the way, until you're warm, not till you're hot. You run until you're warm, not till you're gagging. Over a certain age, you're looking for a blowout. You're looking for a blowout. Don't read a book on it. Use common sense. Would your grandfather have run like a lunatic 5 miles a day, even though he lived to 14? It's your business what you do. You have to take a personal approach to the whole thing. So I'm getting back to the idea of a speaking tour. So I said, okay, I'll do a tour. I'll start a West Coast tour. It'll be Portland for the Saddle Portland audience, San Francisco area, blah, 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 Los Angeles. Then, okay, that'll be it, that segment. Then off for a month. Then I would do like Las Vegas and Phoenix and Texas somehow, like that. Curvature, because I have a huge audience in those areas. You wouldn't believe it. Then Chicago, my WIND audience is a very big audience, believe it or not. then home. Home after that one, exhaustion, complaining, I'm dying, I'm never going to do it again. And then about a month, 2 months later, do the East Coast. It's got to be Providence, Rhode Island for my WPRO people. And certainly the OR audience is massive from New Jersey to Philadelphia. I'd do it probably somewhere on Long Island. I'm fantasizing now. Then maybe Atlanta because the audience is big. And then certainly I have to do Florida, the land of the meat of the early bird, maybe Boca, Del Rey, one of the hotels. And then a vacation, you know, in the next world for the rest of eternity after that one. I even have the stage set for Providence. I thought it up because I love that. Because I watched The Brotherhood. Otherwise, what do I know about Providence? You know, you hear things. What, is there any truth to it? It's like I heard things about Mulberry Street. You think it was true? What did I know? I went down there. All I know is that in Christmas, you could leave Christmas packages in your car on Mulberry Street with the door open and no one robbed it. Somehow that was true. Why, I have no idea. Why the petty thieves wouldn't break into cars and rob on Mulberry Street, I haven't any idea. But for some reason, it worked. I wish the same guys could control Wall Street the way they controlled Mulberry Street in those days. I'd like to send them in and see where the money is going. It's worse than taking out a sporting goods store. They're taking out the U.S. Treasury. But because their names don't end in an O or an E or an I, they can get away with it because they went to Yale and they give you the, I think that another $500 billion in my friend's pockets and we'll be through because at that point already it's time to take a hike. But I have the stage set for Providence, as I was saying. I figured it out. Here it is. Just envision this stage set, okay? Providence, Rhode Island. For whatever reason, because I read fantasy. Okay, the audience is there, milling, blah, 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 blah. Curtain opens, music from the Tarantella and the Godfather or something like it so I don't get sued. And then there's the stage set is a Red Check tablecloth and a Chianti bottle with a candle. I come out. I'm not going to tell you the outfit because someone will steal it before I do it. And I open with When Pasta Was Spaghetti. The audience goes crazy. I have them in my hands for the next 90 minutes. Play When Pasta Was Spaghetti. I'll take a break. The hairy forearms of New York serve you your coffee with a turning gesture, an offering that says drink, eat, enjoy. The wiry Italian in Vincent's Clam Bar, the one behind the greased over register, the young kid connected who receives his deference from the spaghetti cook older than his gangster father, the spaghetti cook who looks like an old-fashioned doctor from the Bronx with clipped mustache. He actually pulls some noodles out of the pot and eats them as they cook, looking to the grimy ceiling for his tender answer. Well, they used to call it spaghetti. Now it's pasta at $10 a plate. The smoky windows of Romeo's Spaghetti now offers radios and knickknacks. It was 50 cents a plate then. In neon letters that you couldn't miss, even through a fogged-over window on a cold winter's eve, there was life. Marinara sauce that smacked to the sea. Noodles as long as your young arm. Meatballs as fluffy as your dream of them. Bread on the table you'd eat against your parents' admonitions that the meal was coming, the meal was coming. And men, some burly with black hairy forearms whose smile scared you, and little skinny guys with the look of murder on their faces, and people who slurped their spaghetti straight to their mouths from the plate, one motion like Chinese shoveling rice at mouth with clicking sticks. That was gusto before it became a beer ad. That was taste before it became a synonym for fashion. That was spaghetti before it became pasta. Savage. Bob in New York, WOR. Go ahead, please.
Yes. My daughter is gay, and she's in a would like to be married. They have a 3-year-old child, a daughter, and they cannot have the rights that a married couple would have without being married.
What rights are those?
Well, inheritance the rights that normal married people would have.
But they're not normal married people. That's the whole point. All of civilization, all of religion says they're not normal married people. And you want the people to say, well, they are normal married people. They're just like a man and a woman. The people have said, no, they're not a man and a woman. That's the whole argument.
Well, that's why they would like things to be changed so that
Well, of course they would like things to be changed, but the people don't go along with it, Bob. That's the whole issue here. What? Don't the people have a right to say, no, we don't accept homosexual marriage as equal to that of a man and a woman? Don't they have the right to do that?
They do have that right.
Well, that's the... See, this is... It's a very difficult thing for a father, such as yourself, who loves his daughter, to raise this issue. And I'm not trying to make a mockery of you or your daughter or your daughter's relationship. But 7 million voters went to the ballot box. They didn't shoot anybody. They didn't scream and yell. They didn't blow anything up. And they passed a they voted on a proposition which said marriage is between a man and a woman. I still, for the life of me, cannot understand why two lesbians, for example, who are living together, need that certificate. What do they need it for? What if all other rights were granted to the lesbian couple or the homosexual couple, such as the rights of inheritance? Why would that not work?
It would work, but somehow they don't have all those rights granted to them. And by the way, you happen to be my favorite program, and I am an extreme conservative.
Well, you see, Bob, I didn't know what your politics are, and I can understand the conundrum you're in. Because when it comes to our children, nothing is good enough for them, and nothing should stand between our protection of them. And I understand that. It can be a real heartbreaking situation. And until, you know, one of your children, I suppose, decides to go down that road, you really don't know what it's like to have that situation in your own life. So I can respect all of that, Bob. I don't happen to be in that situation, but I respect the fact that millions of people, let's say hundreds of thousands of parents might be in that situation. But I don't understand why relegating same-sex couples to domestic partnership doesn't work. I still don't understand that.
Domestic partnership doesn't give them the same rights as a marriage does.
Bob, I want to ask a side question because we'll disagree on this. When did your daughter know she was not heterosexual?
Somewhere in her 30s.
Had she been married to a man, or had she dated men prior to that?
Yes.
All right. Well, this is something that's going on, and it goes back to my fundamental point, which is that when you make something too accessible, you remove too many people from the normal track of marriage and family. When I was a kid, you had to get married. And you ought to have children. That's how society goes forward. The societal pressures must be upon the children to get married and have children, or we're dead as a people.
Savage.